It is the news roundup, where we discuss some of the top regional and local stories of the week. And with us today, Ann Brennan, Assistant Managing Editor for Online Media at the Cape Cod Times. Morning, Ann.
Morning, Mindy.
Well, it was a busy week. Speaker Sal DeMacy stepped down just 3 weeks after being reelected as House Speaker.
Right. This came as a bit of a surprise for some people because he did go ahead and run for the Speaker again. But there have been rumors dogging that for several months now that he'd be stepping down because of the cloud of ethics investigations that are going on around him, including a friend of his, an accountant, Richard Vitale, who was indicted last month for allegedly concealing his work as a lobbyist when he was, lobbying or allegedly lobbying DeMacy on behalf of the ticket scalping industry. They were trying to get a bill passed on that. Mm-hmm. It later was revealed that there were fees paid to Vitale by a pair of men who were trying to get a software contract with the state. This person is it was awarded to them, but I think they lost that contract. And then just last week, the court documents revealed that Vitale paid about $7,500 in legal debts accumulated by DeMacy's in-laws in September 2007.
Yeah. And it was interesting because DeMacy said he was stepping down for personal reasons, said he decided he wanted to venture out on some other type of career, and because he would be looking for another job, he thought it unfair to continue on because, you know, that might happen before his term is up. And it was interesting that he was denying those rumors as late as the end of the week last week,
right.
And then it comes around by Sunday, we get word that, yes, in fact, he's going to announce that he's stepping down.
Right. It was about this time last week that we started hearing he's going to step down. And when I heard it, I thought, well, we've been hearing this for
weeks. Yeah.
So I wasn't sure. But like you said, the letter that he wrote to his House colleagues was released on Sunday, saying that he would be stepping down at 5 p.m. on Tuesday. He also, his spokesman and Governor Patrick Deval Patrick said that DeMacy didn't want to step down in the middle of the budget negotiations. Right. It's a tough year. There's a lot of cuts that have to be made, and that was why he stepped down.
I wonder why he didn't do it 3 weeks ago before he ran for re-election. I guess only he knows the answer to that, I guess.
But I just would like to say, though, that his mark on the state is going to be pretty enduring. Mm-hmm. One of the first things he said he wanted to do when he was elected in 2004 as a speaker was to bring health care to all Massachusetts residents, and working with the Senate president and former Governor Mitt Romney. Mm-hmm. He, Massachusetts has their health care plan. He also was a major block in an amendment to the our state constitution that would have defined marriage as between a man and a woman. And he was also the force, I think, pretty much the only one that stood between legalized casino gaming in this state.
And that's the next step to see what happens, because, of course, the new speaker, Robert DeLeo of Winthrop, has said that he would be open to discussion on this.
Right. DeLeo is a Democrat in Winthrop, but his district also covers Revere, which is where the Wonderland dog track is. So he is seen as somebody who supports slots at race tracks, mm-hmm. and also possibly casino gaming. The sandwich representative, Jeff Davis Perry, says that he sees that the things are coming together, that with DeLeo in place, with the harsh economic crisis that we're up against, that those are forces that are probably going to bring some kind of casino bill before the House again or the legislature.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see it, and certainly there'll be a whole lot of discussion on that when that happens.
Right.
Yeah, because there certainly are still some legislators who are very much opposed to this, but where the numbers fall, hard to say at this point. Well, the new speaker was on the Cape earlier this month talking about the budget problems.
Right. Sarah Peek, who's the representative on the Lower Cape, asked him to come down and talk to local officials about the outlook for the budget and to also listen to state officials. The meeting was in Eastham. To listen to town officials about what they're up against and be able to tell DeLeo, what they're thinking and what their problems are. And Sarah Peek was saying that she voted for him instead of not John Rogers, although
John,
I shouldn't say voted, supported, didn't there were members of our delegation who supported John Rogers, but in the end, DeLeo was the only one who actually was voted upon.
Yeah.
But she said that he's a very open person, that he has a very much an open door policy. The fact that he's willing to come down and talk to people in East Ham is just an example of his willingness to listen to all sides of an issue.
Right. And he told reporters that his priorities include ethics, lobbying, and pension reform, as well as overhauling the state's debt-riddled transportation system. And that was before he was
right. The pension
speaker.
Reform is something that's on Governor Deval Patrick's list as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. And speaking of Governor Patrick, he announced a series of proposals as part of his budget for the next fiscal year, and they include cuts to local aid and new taxes.
Right. This is actually, there were two announcements. One are the midterm cuts, which are about $128 million. He did say that he is not going to cut Chapter 70 money, which is where the schools get state aid.
Right.
They also get on the Cape that Chapter 70 money is between 10% and 20% of their budget. It's actually kind of low in comparison to other parts of the state. But he's also cutting local aid that comes from lottery and other state assistance, and that money often is used to help with school budgets and other town budgets. So these are one more thing that towns are having to grapple with, although Barnstable Town Town Administrator John Klim said, we don't get much of this money anyway, so maybe it's not going to be as hard to overcome, but there are other issues that they're facing. And Patrick then announced his budget for next year, his budget proposals, which would level fund Chapter 70 money and then cut $375 million in non-education local aid to cities and towns next year. He then proposed a series of tax increases. One would be a 1% increase in the tax for hotel accommodations and restaurants, and also pushing for local options, meals, and hotel tax as well. He's also wants to end the 5% sales tax exemption for alcohol, candy, soda, those types of things, expanding the 5-cent bottle bill deposit to include non-carbonated beverages, increasing fees at the registry of motor vehicles. For example, a 5-year renewal for a driver's license would go up $10 from $40 to $50. And cutting the judiciary and district attorneys and sheriff's budgets by 11%.
Yeah, and they're not happy about that.
No.
Yeah. I mean, no one's happy when you have budget cuts. But his ideas here, some of his proposals, are not sitting so well with some of the legislators.
Right. Well, Senate President Therese Murray was critical of Patrick for what she says because it was too speculative and too reliant on federal aid in coming up with these numbers. Part of what the budget that Patrick put forward includes is about $1.2 billion from the federal stimulus package, which has not yet been approved by Congress yet. Mm-hmm. The House bill. A version of it passed earlier this week. The Senate's not going to be voting on it till early next week. And she's saying last year's budget included casino gaming revenue, and that was speculative.
Yeah.
It didn't come. And so she was critical of that. Yeah. Patrick's people say when we were looking at the stimulus money, we were looking at conservative estimates.
Yeah. And of course, what she's saying is we shouldn't be counting money we don't have in hand yet.
Exactly.
Until we have it. Right. Well, staying on the budget theme here, Town of Orleans is considering fee increases as well as seeking a grant to research merging the Orleans and East Ham Police Departments.
Right. In Orleans, they're looking at saving some money or raising some money by the resident beach stickers are now free. They would be charged $10 for that. They would increase fees at transfer stations, would no longer allow people to pick up free loam and wood chipping chips from the transfer station or to bring paint, waste, gasoline, other hazardous materials there.
I wouldn't be surprised to see other towns consider some fee increases, especially as we're talking about potentially even more cuts to local aid down the line. You know, you've got to make it up somewhere. So I wouldn't be surprised to see some of these
right.
some of these proposals being proposed in other towns across the Cape and Islands.
Right. Their budget for next year actually is $123,000 less than this year. Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we talked before about the possibility of combining the police force, which seems, on the surface of things, to make a lot of sense.
Right. This whole notion of regionalization has really been something that has come up to the forefront in the last few years as a way to cost save. And in East Ham, the police chief is retiring, so the towns of Orleans and East Ham are looking at maybe merging their police departments rather than hiring a new police chief.
Timing's good.
Yeah. Right. They've asked for a grant from the Cape Cod Commission that would help them research this, need to find out, for example, do they need authorization by the legislature to do this? Mm-hmm. What would it look like? What would a merged department look like? How would that be handled? So they're, again, applying for this grant to see if this is a possibility.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if they do that. Other police departments maybe look at that, as, you know, especially in that Outer Cape area where you might be able to combine some others as well. I don't know. Speaking of regionalization, Provincetown in their discussions about school regionalization may be leaning a little more toward regionalizing elementary grades rather than the higher grades.
Right. Here's another issue that's been coming up for the last few years of regionalizing the high school or closing the high school and joining the Nauset Regional School District. Well, now the school apparently is looking at regionalizing the elementary grades, using the school and then using the schools for other issues, like as well as school buildings, they would maybe use them as town offices as well. The Provincetown School District is the smallest in the state, and there's been a lot of pressure within the town to save money. Mm-hmm. The town itself is looking at a deficit of $900,000 for next year. Mm-hmm. So they're looking for ways to cut costs.
Yeah, and I guess a big question there in regards to the high school kids is, would there be a savings? Because transportation is a lot more expensive than people might think it is. It's not as easy as just sticking those kids on the bus and, you know, sending them to the next closest school.
Right.
It costs more than you might imagine.
And there are people in town also who are saying, look, the schools are the heart of any community. Right. Do we really want to get rid of them?
So it's a tough decision. It's a tough conversation. It's a news roundup. We're talking with Ann Brennan, Assistant Managing Editor for Online Media at the Cape Cod Times. Well, over in Barnstable, the school committee has voted to close Osterville Elementary and Hyannis East, along with Katuit Marston's Mills. And they've also voted to relocate the Marston's Mills East Horace Mann Charter School. And this is not sitting well with everybody.
No, it's not. And this is so complicated.
Yeah.
I think the stimulus plan is less complicated than the plan they've come up with this. But what it would be was they would close the Hyannis East Elementary School, as you said, but move the East Marston's Mills Horace Mann School over to the what is now the East Hyannis School building. And it would be a K to 3, and then there would be another Horace Mann school that would be 4th and 5th. The 6th and 7th graders would go to the middle school, and the 8th graders would go to the high school. I hope I got that right. But it's the people whose children are at the East Marston's Mills Horace Mann school that are really upset about the fact that they're moving the school to a distance away, but also because this school building has had some issues in the past with ventilation issues that were causing people to get sick. At one point, the principal had to operate from a different school because she had allergies and other things. It turned out that there were the vents were really dirty, that animals had been able to get in there and defecate, and there were other things that they say they have cleaned up and fixed. The school is on line to get a new heating system, but there are folks with the Horace Mann School who resent their kids having now to travel farther.
Yeah, and what I don't understand, I thought one of the reasons that they wanted to close Hyannis East initially was because it's one of the older buildings and it is in need of some repair and things. So I don't understand myself that decision to move.
From what I understand, because the school services mainly has a huge population of free lunch population, low income population, that they wanted to keep that school in the community mm-hmm. and not have no school in mm-hmm. Hyannis. And that was the reason behind this.
I see. Okay. And then let's see, we have over in Harwich, school officials at Cape Cod Regional Tech are bringing back a telephone tip line in efforts to identify who may have made a bomb threat earlier this week.
Right. This was a call that came into the Dennis Police Department and said there was a bomb at the Cape Cod Regional Technical High School in Harwich, caused the school to be evacuated. Everybody was sent home early. Now, this was the fourth incident in a year. Last February and March, there were two situations where there were bomb threats, either scrawled on a bathroom wall or scrawled on a piece of paper. Then in November, again, they found a piece of paper or a scrawling on a bathroom wall saying there was a bomb. And last year, after the first two, they did establish a tip line. It didn't lead to any arrests or catching anybody. But they are hoping that with the new number that they've instituted, that people will come forward. There are police officials who say when you do a bomb threat, you might want to brag about it, mm-hmm. and that they're hoping somebody heard from people who had.
Right. And I guess, like most tip lines, you can give your tip anonymously.
Right.
Yeah.
We didn't have the tip line yet when we were publishing, but I can give you the number of the high school. It's 508-432-4500, and okay. they can direct you to the
Great.
Extension.
Well, of course, budget cuts are being felt across the board, and there's a program aimed at keeping elderly people in their homes and out of nursing homes, and that's facing some serious cuts.
Right. Right now, about 34,000 elderly Massachusetts residents, about 1,700 of which live on Cape Cod, receive in-home health assistance. This means somebody might come to your house and make sure you've had your medicine. They may make you a meal. They may give you a shower. And generally, these home visits are an hour and a half, maybe a couple of times a week. It just depends on the person who they're serving. And this type of home care, the home care supporters say, is a way of keeping elderly people in their home and not having them to go to nursing homes, which right. are far more expensive. Right. One estimate we were given is that the average cost of home health care is about $9 a day, whereas it's $158 for nursing home, not including medical care.
It seems like this would be one of those things you would want to trim last, because as you're saying, it is much more cost efficient to have these people going into the homes than to have these folks ending up in the nursing home. So I guess what they're going to do now is only take the most serious cases? Is
that right. They're going to take only the most needy cases. At this point, they have 38 people on the waiting list. Rather than cut people, that's the biggest waiting list they've had since the 1980s, by
wow.
the way. But they're going to only take the most needy people, and they're not going to cut people off. They are going to wait, they're going to cut through attrition. So
right.
if you're
on the program, you're
right.
okay.
But it doesn't mean the 38 people in line will, if somebody
right.
goes off,
that
one of those people will get in.
Yeah.
And I think one of the people we wrote about was a couple who have live in an in-law apartment that's attached to their daughter's house. Mm-hmm. But the daughter and her husband both work.
Right.
And one of the her parents has Alzheimer's. And so they get this assistance to help, take the husband for a walk. And
mm-hmm.
Because both of the people are working,
they can't be there
to take care of the yeah. of their parents.
Well, the unemployment rate on the Cape has climbed to 8.7%.
Yes. That we're watching these numbers go up
across
the country. In December of 2007, the county's unemployment rate was 5.2%. A year later, this 8.7% was a December number. And in Dukes County, the unemployment rate over the same period jumped from 4.5% to 7.4%, and on Nantucket from 2.7% to 6.3%. That represents, on Cape Cod, that jump to 8.7% represents about 10,000 people out of work, and people are guessing that maybe we'll see even higher numbers before for January.
Yeah, we should say the state rate was 6.5% last month. And this is, I think, everybody's biggest concern right now. If you talk to anyone, everyone's worried about is my,
right.
No matter how secure your job may seem, because right. we've been seeing that. You look at things like Microsoft, who has never right. had layoffs, now having layoffs.
Google.
I mean, yeah.
Google.
I know. It's very, very scary. And we've, as we said, we've been seeing, we've been seeing layoffs here on the Cape, and the IFA laid off 10% of its worldwide workforce, including 26 employees at its Yarmouth Port headquarters.
Right. And that those 26 people, their average salary was $80,000 a year. So these were good paying jobs
yeah.
that are now gone, at least for the foreseeable future. At IFA, the Fred Reagan, the O'Reagan, the president there, said that they're getting the same number of people making donations to mm-hmm. them, but the donations are much smaller.
Right.
And so a lot of nonprofit organizations are seeing this. Where,
really struggling, yeah.
You know, you have places like the – we were before the show talking about the Bernie Madoff pyramid scheme
yeah.
or
yeah.
alleged pyramid scheme, and that's hurt a lot of nonprofits who had their money.
Well, and also some of the big funders who,
yes.
who've had some issues with what's happening on Wall Street have had to, you know, aren't making some of those big donations that they've made in the past, and you know that's hurting
exactly.
everybody's bottom line. Yeah,
and these nonprofits that had their money invested also took a big hit when the stock market and other financial markets crashed.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say crashed, but went down substantially.
And then all this bad news. People saying, I can imagine saying, "Oh my gosh, this is just so horrible news." But we do have a good news story here, and this is Retrix is saying if a deal to acquire a new based air carrier, New York based air carrier, and charter operation goes through, they're going to add 80 to 100 jobs, and half of those would be here on Cape Cod.
Right. Retrix Aerodrome Centers has a business at the Barnstable Municipal Airport. This company services high-end clientele who fly their own jets and planes into a local airport. They also have a center in Sarasota, Florida. If the deal goes through for New World Jet Corporation on Long Island, New York, this will allow the company to handle and operate 20 types of aircraft, which is much more than they have right. Mm-hmm. They can right now, including Learjets, Gulfstream, Bombardier, Global Series, and other types of aircraft that then would potentially be. They're thinking they would have 10 to 15 aircraft based in Hyannis, which would have to be maintained and serviced,
right.
And that would create some of the jobs. So they're hoping that this goes through. In the meantime, in order to make this work locally, they want to renovate one of the hangars out at the airport.
Mm-hmm.
From what our reporter could learn when he was writing the story, the Airport Commission hasn't been formally approached about those renovations to that other hangar, so we're not sure where that's going
to
go.
Happens there, yeah. Well, last week we talked about the possibility of the Morant Canal Generating Plant closing, and you had an article this week about what might be next if that were to happen.
Right. The Morant plant, which is pretty much of an icon coming over the Sagamore Bridge, the stack, it's sitting on the side of the Sandwich Marina for so many years. That area of town, people are thinking, would be a great place to put a mall, some retail, some restaurants, and other things. And the town needs it because that plant makes up about pays $2.4 million a year to the town. And if the town loses that revenue, it might spreading that over the property owners there would mean about an increase of $200 a year in property taxes.
Yeah, so it'd be important to get somebody else in there that could pay those taxes.
Right, and as soon as possible.
Right.
The problem is we went and looked at a case up in Burlington, Vermont, where a plant shut down, and they're finally getting a multi-use area out of there with a children's museum and some retail. The problem was it took 23 years to get this in place. And so it's a cautionary tale about, you know, if this
Maybe start thinking about it now.
Right.
Tough economic times as well, so that might be even tougher to get somebody in there right away.
Right.
Well, we have a local organic farmer that could get the lease to farm the 99-acre Barnstable County Farm. This was the sheriff's inmates were raising vegetables and flowers there. And I guess it's the organic farmer. Let me just take a look at that. This is Tim Friary. He would like to put a farm stand and a community-supported agriculture operation and do some upgrades to the property. And so I guess if that would be great if that happened. I guess we did have the inmates still selling vegetables and flowers there up until the end of this growing season. So,
right.
So how quickly they might get in there remains to be seen, but
yes.
At least we have a possible contender there. Well, let's talk a little bit about icy conditions, Ann, because anybody who's been out this week with we had all that kind of nasty, we had snow and then rain and sleet and then it freezes, and you look in some of these yards and they look like skating rinks. Still not quite as icy as it was, but it has been really bad, and we've been seeing a lot of people falling.
Right, not just yesterday, but pretty much the whole month of January. We sent a reporter out, Cynthia McCormick, went to talk to people in the emergency rooms and found that Cape Cod Hospital in January had 320 people come in from falling accidents that were recorded as falling accidents on ice, falling on the ice with broken bones and other things. Brian Glennie, an assistant district attorney, slipped earlier this month on his way to court and shattered his elbow and had to be treated, have an operation, so they had to delay the murder trial he was about to prosecute.
So 320, did you say?
Yeah.
And those are the people that we know about.
Right.
Yeah.
And as compared to last December, last month, which they treated 199 people.
Yeah.
So there's
so
quite a few.
Be careful,
people.
I guess.
Yes.
Don't walk on the ice if you don't have to.
I would say there are tips on how to walk and travel across ice safely with this story, and it's you can see it on CapeCodOnline.com.
Okay, and then you have an update for us on Senator Kennedy's condition?
Right. Word came earlier this week that Senator Kennedy will not immediately be returning to the Capitol after he suffered the seizure during the luncheon after the inauguration. He is in Florida, where he shipped his boat actually last October, and is down there recuperating. They said that this seizure was caused by exhaustion, but he is suffering from a malignant brain tumor and is recuperating in Florida. And they say he's going to continue spearheading the effort to pass a comprehensive health care plan under the new White House administration.
Yeah, and with about 20 seconds left, Ann, you went to the inauguration. You were down there. Great experience.
It was a great experience. I feel like I met America. I met so many people from so many places in this country. Love to hear their stories. Love to talk with them. And it was a great unifying experience, I guess I should say.
And you had your kids with you, too.
Yes, I did.
And they felt the same way?
They did. They did. They're the reasons we went. They begged us to take them.
Yeah, isn't that great? Ann Brennan, Assistant Managing Editor for Online Media at the Cape Cod Times. Thanks, Ann.
Thank you.
I'm Indy Todd. Thank you for listening.
The Point is hosted and produced by Mindy Todd. The executive producer is Steve Young. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH Radio.